heard a girl. Agus Sharp and Ish Padra Reardit, Kevin O'Reilly, Agus Martin Hayes on album Truer shall douse it in Tullan.
Are we even in a Gaeltacht area?
I think there's a Gaeltacht in West Clare, but I mean it's close enough to Connemara that it's obviously heavily influenced if it isn't Irish speaking itself in places.
So this is the Burren.
Here we are.
We've never been here before. Never driven through it. Actually, we realise on the way down here we've never even been to County Clare together.
And it's such an iconic part of Ireland. It has the Burren, it has the Cliffs of Moher, and it has some of the best food producers in this country, so it's been a long time coming.
The fields are all very, very rural looking, as a field would be, since there's a couple of sheep just there, stone walls. It's a beautiful, beautiful day. And you just said to me before I hit record, it reminds you of Iceland.
It really does, because this is quite a flat area of Ireland that we're driving through at the minute, and it's just rolling hills as far as the eye can see. Now, we visited Iceland when...
Turn right.
Thank you for interrupting me. Turn right, Patrick.
Now, we visited Iceland when it was in the thick of winter, and it was nothing like this in terms of the look, but just the landscape really reminds me of Iceland. But obviously it's a lot greener here.
32 counties and 40 shades of green. Okay, we're turning right.
So why are we in the Burren?
Well, for this episode of Chew the Fat, we can definitely feel the fat on me right now, actually, jiggling away through this road.
I think we've just turned off a main road into a Bovarine, so...
Good luck to us. Oh my god, all the stone walls, I love it. So in this episode of Chew the Fat, we are going to the Burren Smokehouse. And it is a brand that you will know from supermarkets, I think Super Value and Dunn Stores in particular, great champions, but also the Fallon and Burns of this world, all stock this fantastic smoked salmon.
Yes, and it is heavily awarded, and... it's a brand that we have adored for so many years and who we have had an eye on to include in Chew the Fat for a long, long time. So on this very bright spring day, we are off to see what they do.
One of the draws of Burren Smokehouse, though, for us is the amazing, amazing Brigitta, who we adore. We've met at several different events and different shows, and we cannot wait for you to meet her. She is Swedish, so we may start talking either in bad Swedish or about Swedish things. Are you ready?
Yes.
In Swedish?
Ja.
Tack så mycket.
From Nyköping, so 100 kilometers south of Stockholm. And again, like Peter was telling his story about the living off the land, and we were self-sufficient. My father was a huntsman. He was a politician, but he hunted for moose, roe deer, pheasant, duck, hare, whatever. And we fished. We fished for eel, pike, perch in the Baltic.
Yeah.
Again, household purposes. Yes. So we used to get our eel that we fished, smoked in the local fisherman's smokehouse in Hummelvik. They would smoke once a week, and they still do. The son of the father who we would bring the eel to is now smoking. He's in his 70s, so it's like been going on for a long time. And it would be very, very simple, like just two stainless steel doors. The fire would be on the bottom of the, in kind of like a wardrobe almost, and the fish would be over it, so there'd be hot smoking.
Yeah.
Only, and the whole, I mean, everything's just black with tar, because they don't, you know, they don't wash down the walls at all.
Yeah.
So it's quite a strong flavor, but very genuine, like, smokehouse.
Oh, delicious.
And so that's where we got our inspiration for, actually, initially. But then we got inspiration from Ireland, and as well, we travelled a lot around here and the in Sweden to kind of gather, you know, what other people do, do a bit of research. And we had already, Peter had already started smoking that. This is more than 30 years ago. So we had like a little 12-side smoker outside our house. It was like total cottage industry. And well, then we built, Peter progressed, and he built a 50-side one, which with concrete blocks. But we had difficulties to get a consistent temperature. We couldn't control the temperature. So sometimes when we cold smoke, it has to be below 35 degrees Celsius, would go into a little bit too hot. And then we decided to actually work together with food technologists to produce the patented smoking method that we have, keeping the core of, you know, we believe smoking is an art and a craft, and real fire is what you have, not kind of electrically created fire. And that's when we created, this is one of our smokers that we have. We have three, and they all have the same principle. A real fire, and then but we have a little bit of control element on the temperature, so the we have cooling and heating elements, so that we can get a proper, you know, a little bit of fluctuation on the temperature, but it would be generally it won't allow it to be go over 35, so it's like probably 27, 28, 29, 30 degrees is kind of fluctuating around there for 16 hours for the cold smoking, and then when we do hot smoking, it would be 85 degrees Celsius, so it's a fully cooked product. And I can give you a tasting actually of the two, so just side by side. And that's very much what we do here in the visitor center. It we is want to it kind of give taste education, give a bit of an idea of why people smoke, why it's so important to smoking, salting, drying. For preservative measures. So.
And it is one of the best ways to preserve fish in particular as well. And, you know, in Scandinavia, that is such a huge deal, especially the further north that you go. And I suppose it's great to see it's such a big industry now for you and so for so many others in this country as well.
Yeah, and I mean, it's what we survive on. And we're still, we wouldn't be, we don't have a huge, we're not a big smokehouse. We're kind of small to medium. And that's the way we want to keep it, because we don't want to in any way shortchange anybody on quality. And but for one of our philosophies to use 100% Irish, so whether it's Irish wild, wild Irish, or Irish organic, and it's all from the west coast of Ireland. So it's Irish smoked, like barn smoked, Irish smoked, and Irish organic or Irish wild salmon. And then Irish mackerel and Irish trout from Goat's Bridge.
Of course, yeah.
So for 30 years, that's exactly what we did. We didn't get anything conventionally farmed from anywhere to have a different price. You know, with the Irish organic salmon, it is a little bit more, you know, the buying in, it's cost more because it's a high quality product and it's been produced in more, it has taken a lot more energy to produce it, and the feed is more expensive and whatever, you know. But it's a high quality product.
And how have you seen Irish food change over those 30 years?
Well, I suppose it's the richness of it has increased. You still have, you know, the forefronters was like the Millines, the Gubeen, the cheeses, and now next generation, the Fingal, coming out with the meats. And, you know, there would have been, there's certain, the starters, you know, or even Ballymaloe is part of that. You know, certain pockets of intense food production, food culture, and then, and it's in, on the chef side, same thing. You know, the forefronters would be the likes of Ross Lewis, Derry Clark, Paul Flynn, you know, and more. Philip Ferrano in Ashford, he was doing his thing. You know, Aidan McGrath, Jonathan Keane. So then you have the next generation. And I think it has, because there has been a lot of support and a lot of need for tourism and food production to build the industry, and a lot of support as well for the likes of Bord Bia, Bordish Gmara, the smaller, the leader companies, the, you know, there has been a focus on food, And because of that, Foggy Ireland, Tourism Ireland, you know, the huge support, even if it isn't only monetarily, but actually with training, bringing buyers in, mm-hmm. you know, would be, and, you know, they could be food buyers or it could be tourism product buyers, mm-hmm. you know.
And that's the advantage of you having both the visitor centre and the smokehouse here. It combines the two.
But yes, absolutely. So basically, when we started here, first of all, we actually did slow food because we only buy from around us. Mm. We didn't know that there was such a thing as slow food then, which I discovered in 2004. Food tourism, it's the concept of what we're doing. People didn't understand in the beginning what was going on or what we were doing. But the fact that we had a visitor center, talked about the product and stuck to what we wanted to showcase to people that travel through this amazing burn landscape on the way to Cliffs Moher or just for the burn, that they would also taste products from the burn that is produced here, Irish sourced. Yes. Like when I go to Sicily, I want to see the genuinely, you know, Sicilian products or traveling to, I remember being in Marsala, it's like, Marsala, isn't there Marsala wine? Oh, so this is where the Marsala wine is made. I now understand. Yes. Do you know that it's Marsala's actually place name? Oh, right.
The amount of times that I've realized that after leaving a place.
No.
And it's been happening because they don't make a big deal about it. Mm. You think of these names and you go, oh, of course, that cheese is from this town that I was in with the name of it, but not on the menus.
Yeah,
and it's so vital to make sure that a destination reflects the flavors and the producers of an area, especially when it comes to food tourism.
Yeah. And I mean, that again, like we are operating here with the Burren Ecotourism Network, the Burren and Cliffs of Moher Geopark, UNESCO Geopark, and through Foggy Ireland and through these organizations and heaps of voluntary work and the Burren Food Trail, we are, you know, in our little region doing that. Foggy Ireland is also extremely supportive and acutely aware of the importance, particularly the last few years, the focus on bringing it in on the menus and the work they do to give a solid experience for anybody that goes anywhere in Ireland, that, you know, it's consistent. Yes, you have the local produce, they are named on the menu, and we know where they're coming from. Gregan's Castle, who's right beside us, like we supplied them from the very beginning. Simon Hayden was, and now his mum and dad, Peter and Moira Hayden, Hayden were running the place, and it was one of our first customers.
Yeah.
So as a result of them putting our name on the menu and using a local produce for them, they had an understanding of that as well back in the late 80s, you know, and the early 90s. And as a result of being on their menu, we got a write-up in the New York Times magazine, and we were just starting up, like a few years on the road, and it was absolutely invaluable to get something like that, you know. And that was, you know, for Gregan's Castle, you know, for anybody that wants to put it on the menu, it shows that they care, that they genuinely want to give an experience to their customers of what the local area is producing. So it's a win-win for both, you know, and, you know, once of course, that if you mention some of the menu that you actually buy from them as well, you know, which is most of the time the case, but it would have a few times when it doesn't happen.
Oh, yes, we've heard the horror stories.
Yes, and in terms of the products, who is the customer? Are they Irish? Are they international? Are they Irish America? Is your customer educated? Are they flash? Are they in the area here? Who is your specific customer?
Okay, so we're actually the full range of the people that you mentioned. So we would have local people that are so proud and bringing gifts from Listenvarna, or, you know, coming from Listenvarna, from Clare, you know, there might be Clare people bringing it as gifts, either getting it directly from us or at the airport, in Shannon Airport, when they travel out. Local people that buy our products and get it shipped to friends, family. Irish people, our Irish food community. And then we have a huge amount of French customers as well. they're particular, they love food and they totally understand quality. Italian community, people from the US. And one of the things that we have policy to do is if somebody comes inside the door, we always give them a tasting of some smoked salmon because it just gives an understanding of what they're entering into. Mm. For us, we don't have anything to hide. So it's really important that people understand what they're going to meet. And they can only do that really through the palate, so tasting it. And we, you know, often kind of cold smoked and hot smoked, so because they're two very different products. And it's interesting because they, like the cold smoked, have that fish texture, the flavor, the moisture, and really fish laid. So some people just would only eat cold smoked salmon. Yeah. The hot smoked salmon, they find maybe a little bit drier, still flavorsome, and really good. We have other customers that, tasting, not really that into smoked salmon, and they think cold smoked salmon. I said, just try the hot smoked here. Mm. And they would probably be more of a meat eater. They might have had a bad experience of fish when they were young, and they, you know, be forced to eat it or whatever. And it's a fully cooked product. It's very safe feeling because, you know, taste is also about texture. So the texture is safe. It's fully cooked, and it's not kind of as fishy. It's very meaty, very meaty texture. So they, do you know what? I actually like that. I can do that. And also, you know, we also have people say, do you know what? I'm sick and tired of smoked salmon. I don't want to go and get it. It doesn't do anything more for me anymore because the quality of standard has gone down. Yeah. The taste of our salmon, that is the Irish organic, has a certain texture. There's a clean, very clean feeling and clean texture of it. Texture and taste. Because of the way it's been produced, it's actually nutritionally like 10 times as high in omega-3 and 6 oils compared to conventional farmed salmon. Mm. So, you know, and I think that you can almost taste nutrition or at least get a feel for it.
Yeah.
There's something, it's a clean feeling. You know, sometimes you might have to have products beside each other to get that clean feeling that, because, you know, you forget, you travel and say, that's okay. Some people have just acuted, you know, acute, they know, just like that.
Yeah.
But if you haven't experienced it, you know, we've had lots of customers who said, do you know what? I've stopped eating smoked salmon. Then I had yours. I'm ruined. Yeah. I'm going to have to buy it all the time. No. You know, I now believe I'm back and I do believe in smoked salmon again. And that's the biggest praise you can ever get, that to turn somebody around and says, you know, I've had so many, something that doesn't satisfy me, you know, but this does, you know, and that, and we have, as well, you know, we do a certain amount of people for Christmas come for company gifts, or even during the year, they send thank you to somebody.
Okay.
And instead of sending a bottle of some sort or some wine or whiskey or whatever, well, maybe more wine, that it comes as a smoked salmon gift. And very much, you know, they would have started 1 year and they come back year after year because their customers come back to them and they say, you know, this is a gift for the whole family. It's not only for mom and dad, it's the whole family. Yeah. And, you know, that was amazing. Actually, you know, they get a reaction because sometimes you send a gift, whether it's a gift to family or friend, whatever, and you don't hear anything, and they got there and it's fine, you know. Which bottle was it again?
Yeah.
You know, or...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then, but it's more of an outstanding experience.
Yeah.
We have discovered, you know, because people come back to us and say, listen, thank you. We really loved that, and we got a good reaction on, and that's what you want when you give a gift. You know,
absolutely.
That's the whole concept of it, you know. But
so. Speaking of fish in general, it's often been said that Irish people and Ireland in general, even as an island nation, aren't that great about eating fish. In your experience, how does Irish fish compare to others internationally?
Okay, so, you know, the mackerel, the pelagic mackerel that we get here is amazing. It's very high in omega-3 and 6 oils as well, and particularly the winter mackerel. So the November, December, January, February is the time we get our mackerel from that time because it is particularly high in omega-3 and 6 oils. It's perfect for smoking. Wild fish is wild fish. Now, the west coast of Ireland is particularly clean. I mean, I studied marine botany, marine biology, And I took samples of seaweed from the west coast of Ireland, brought it home to Sweden, and there was nothing in it at all that shouldn't be there. So there was no heavy metals, there was no mercury, there was no... And I grew up in Sweden in the time of... the Baltic Sea actually had huge issues in the 70s and 80s of heavy metals, PCB, DDT. So for me, it was like, wow, this is amazing. You know, no radiation. Now, this RCs, the realities that RCs do have, you know, they're all connected. So there is a certain amount, but in comparison, there's nothing really there that shouldn't be there. So there's, you would have maybe some extra nutrition from, you know, coming in from the land close to the sea. But apart from that, like, Ireland is unique in the, because of the temperature, and because there's so much sea around and that constant temperature that is in Ireland. So for food production and also from seafood, you know, it is one of the cleanest. But of course, wild fish is wild fish. But, you know, at the same time, and also I think that with the Irish organic salmon, I get particular salmon from Clare Island.
Yeah.
And again, you know, you they constantly swim. And again, it is as clean as you can get it in the world, you know.
Is that what brought you to Ireland initially?
I wanted to, I like, two of my sisters had been here, they're a bit older than me, and I wanted to experience the music, I wanted to experience the culture, and I think coming from, you know, Baltic Sea can be very wild, but the Atlantic is just that little bit, you know, more. And I love that feeling of being on a very, like, very far out place. And also that thing of standing out on Dunangus on the Aran Islands or up at the Cliffs of Moher and overlooking and knowing that, okay, so it's all that Atlantic and then the USA. You know, this is very special feeling. I mean, I would have traveled up to northern Norway and been up on Lofoten Island and had a similar experience. Now that is a bit further away. Here, same feeling, but maybe a bit more social interaction around that, you know, like people and music. And I think, really, I think why I stayed was, well, Peter caught me, but also the area caught me, and that human interaction that is something very unique here. I think Clare is special, you know, that several counties has it, but and everywhere in Ireland has that kind of communication. It's important to talk to each other, it's important to salute, human interaction. And I think that Sweden is brilliant and you would find that, but not quite to the same extent. No. You know, it's a little bit more reserved, it's a little bit more, and for me, the warmth, you know, of the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, people talk about each other and that can be good and bad, you know, but they do, in the end of the day, it's actually caring.
Yeah.
Being nosy, but, or being really, you know, wanting to tell the good story, but it's also, or it's bad story, whatever, but it is human interaction. And I think that's what's really what I loved about here. And then the literature, music, I think for me, it was a lot of freedom from where I came. You know, I had freedom at home as well. And it didn't also, you know, you grow up somewhere and you get blind and you really want to... I actually threw myself out into the world and to experience and learning and learning about other cultures. And I didn't only travel to Ireland my first trip. I traveled a bit further through Europe and into Egypt and Israel and then came home again. But... yeah, I wanted to learn, and I've learned a lot since. And, you know, I'm very lucky to, even though this is a very small village, 800 people in the middle of nowhere, but actually center of universe because of the Cliffs of Moher.
Absolutely.
Like, I meet people here from all over the world. It's extremely stimulating. I meet food writers, I meet, you know, bloggers as yourselves, I'll meet, you know, and... I suppose that is part of the beauty of being in a kind of further away place.
Yeah.
I think I wouldn't do the middle. No. It's either, you know, it's either that you're, you know, you're in extreme. City center Dublin or you're in the furthest extreme place, you know, that the middle
Yeah. Little isn't too interesting. It's good to be in the wild end.
It has its beauty. Yeah. It has its beauty. But maybe I think I need sea as well.
Yeah.
I actually need the sea. I grew up by the Baltic. I need to be close to the sea. If I'm not, I start to feel a bit strange or there's something wrong. And then I realize, no, I don't have enough of water.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually... But I don't have that sensation. I studied in Lund for a period of time. And Lund is not that far from the sea, but it was... I really had this, I'm missing something. I don't feel right. And then I realized, I don't have a sea.
Yeah.
I'm not close enough to the sea. But I have it here all the time, you know. Jeez, we can go out, like our children, you know, go surfing, Fanur Beach, Lahinch Beach. Yeah, there's so much richness here. Walking in the barren, you know. Yeah, there's a lot to be thankful for here. Mm. And a lot of interesting people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Kind of going back a little bit about Irish people and fish in particular. And we know that annually the likes of Gaz Smith and Niall Solonghi do the kind of initiative to get children eating fish. At your end of things, how do you see families visiting here? Are the international kids, is that the right way of calling them, international kids a bit more better than far better than the Irish kids when it comes to being adventurous with fish? Mm.
Well, in a way, like smoked salmon is a fairly safe product.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't, you know, maybe if you're a fishmonger, you have more of that issue. And I think that people are genuinely want to eat fish. And I think that it's changing. There's been a lot of programs. There's been a lot of easy to cook fish promotions between Bordbia, Bordish Gmara, and, you know, so we would have groups of Italian students coming in, or we would have particularly groups of French students coming in. And yes, they would actually, you know, have a tour. It might be 50 of them. Nearly every one of them buys a little small pack of salmon to bring home to the parents as a gift. You know, it probably is a different, slightly different culture there. But I don't think that is, I think it's changing.
Yeah.
And I think that there's always been a base in the Irish psyche of knowing what good food is.
Yeah.
Like the whole world has gone through, whether you're from Italy, you're from Sweden, you know, you're anywhere, the mass-produced food, the fast food, it is there, and it's a reality. And I think that the awareness to counteract it is the same job that is going on, whether it's Ireland, Sweden, USA, you know, some more extreme areas. But I think that the Irish, it's not that far away.
Mm.
And, you know, it's a relative, we have a relative small amount of population. So it's easier to change things and cultures in Ireland than, for example, bigger countries like even UK.
Mm.
And I think that people are relatively, yeah, I you know, I don't want to be overstating that, but relatively well off, you know, and its connection is there through grandparents or the parents of growing, having your market garden. It's not that long ago that everybody had a garden or a relative, you know, that they were very close to the land.
Yes.
That is still there, and I think that, you know, the farming community is still... You talk to people, I grew up on a farm, I grew up on a farm. You know, it is very close. So people, I don't think they're doing too badly. Now, maybe that fish on Friday and people being feeling forced to do that has affected some people. But again, you know, our bones, you know, texture, you know. But I think it's moving away from that. I think so. You know, And I think that when I came here first in the 80s, it was very much more a feeling of that meat was of much higher importance.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is, you know, every so often meat, absolutely amazing. But I think that it was a focus on it. And we are not poor anymore. I think that's maybe was actually apparent in the 80s that we had to eat fish and we couldn't afford to eat meat. Mm. Now we can afford to eat meat. So we're eating a lot of it, you know. I'm not sure if I read it right, but there was a little bit of feeling of that, I think. But, and, you know, like Ireland has gone through an extraordinary transitions, even since I came here back in the 80s. Socially, you know, legislation, yeah. politically, you know, it was tough times. Mm. But there was also, at the same time, the 80s was great times for community, actually. Mm. You know, there was a huge sense of community. I loved that. I came from outside. I didn't live with, you know, political, social, you know, structures, because yeah. I came from the outside, and I could really enjoy and see the quality of life here, of people, communication, music, warmth, caring for each other.
Yeah. And so I suppose Irish people molded you then into that way as well, that you learned a lot from the community to kind of create the person you are today.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, certainly Peter, you've already been talking to him, like he's the gift of the gab, you know. And yeah, my mother would have been very social. My father wouldn't have been a more quiet person. And I probably am quite social, but I certainly have learned to, you know, a little. I cannot compete, you know, there's no way. Even in my language, sometimes I do stumble, you know, to have the right phrases for, you know, but I'm getting a lot better. I'm a bit behind all the time, you know, but I had, you know, something maybe a little bit slower and, you know, pace, but...
I think you're an icon of the food industry, and you're active and you're out there and everyone knows you, but in thinking about Irish food and the future, are there challenges up ahead, or are there things that over the next few years in terms of Irish food that we all have to be more conscious of?
I think that we need to, there's a huge, because of the supports from the likes of Forge Ireland, from Bord Bia, I think the food movement is only growing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's growing. I mean, we have a seaweed pesto here. That was only created like from a young generation, younger than me, next generation with their young kids, family in Inishmore, starting a superb product. And I think that using seaweed so cleverly, like when I studied phycology with Michael Geary over in Galway University, at that time, back in the 90s it would have been, and there was virtually no edible seaweed products, very, very few edible seaweed products to be got. Look at what's happening now. Yeah. Look at the, and I think that it does sound strange, but I think we're only starting, because the support is there, the consumers want it. I mean, I got so excited about the seaweed pesto. Yeah, so did a lot of other people. People traveled. I was on the program and I said, oh, we're going to buy it in. Little did I know that, like 2 days after the product, after the program was shown, somebody traveled from Limerick, which is an hour and a bit, to Listonvarna, to our visitor center, to buy it. Do you know, like, so the enthusiasm is there. And I think that the Irish community is very discerning, you know. Mm. In the end of the day, no good food and good products. So you have, on the one hand, the Irish community, which is really important to keep everything, that it's so important to have it as a... the Irish food movement and the Irish cuisine, which is, I believe, emerging. Mm. I think there is a possibility between chefs, second generation chefs, producers, second generation producers. We're in a climate right now where, oh, let it happen. Yeah. Do you know? Yeah. Like it feels like, oh, it's so close, you know? It's there somewhere, you know? It's about some form of definition. Mm. What is the the difficulty? It's probably going to be something very simple, but it's the question is, what is the definition? How could Irish cuisine be defined in combination of products? I think it will have to be brought up by the products, but they're like the Nordic cuisine. It was like the foraging, which is here as well, but it needs to be...
We need to do it our own way.
Yes, exactly. You know, but it's here.
Just need the foil lifted off the lid.
5 years, yeah, okay. 3 years, yeah. 2 years. You know, it's about like, I think there's a collectiveness that I think it will happen.
Yeah.
Now, on the pitfalls, of course, I mean, the end, it's a really simple message. Quality, quality, quality. following the labeling laws, if you say it's Irish, it actually comes from Ireland. It's not packed in Ireland.
Yeah.
And I mean, that legislation will get stricter and stricter anyway. And I think that people get more and more aware, turn around the product, it says it's Irish, and then it says, you know, I can see on the not IE number, mm-hmm. or the DK or UK or whatever, and that might not be a bad product. You know, of course you get imported products that are really, really good as well. So that's not it. But if you're suggesting that it is Irish and it ain't, we can't afford to do that anymore. And I think that the honesty of that and the honesty of the quality product, the honesty of origin of the product, and, well, declare it's Irish smoked, you know, Scottish salmon, it's Irish smoked Norwegian salmon, it's Irish smoked whatever, Faroese salmon. That's nothing bad. Mm-hmm. It gives an option for the consumer to understand what it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, it comes at a different price. This is what I can afford right now. But don't pretend as if it's an Irish product. It's something different, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that, I suppose that's the pitfalls of making sure that you're very honest about what you produce, how you produce. And of course the space for, you know, larger production and whatever, but it is something different. Mm-hmm. It's up to the consumer to choose what they want or what they can feel that they can afford, they can buy. And I mean, on that, you know, you were asking earlier on who are our customers. And I think we have the full range of customers. I mean, I have people that wouldn't have huge spending budget, but it might be for the Christmas or because they feel the nutrition of the product is so good, they mightn't have a whole lot of money, but they will get that product mm-hmm. because they know it's going to be good for them.
Yeah.
Do you know? They wouldn't, and then you have people that, yes, they have the budget, they can buy in because, but they also choose to use that money to buy really high quality, and they recognize that. So, you know, same thing, we supply wholesale to castles and five-star hotels, but we also have cafes that want to showcase. They wouldn't be cost a fortune to go in there. They do portion control. Mm-hmm. They give a smaller portion of something that is really, really good and really, really nutritious because they believe in the product and they want to show Irish, 100% Irish products. They care about where they get their products from, you know.
So a smokehouse, a experiential centre, a brewery, a pub, how are you planning the next couple of years? How are you expanding? Are you growing?
For the moment, we're investing in our infrastructure. So I have done a complete redesign of the visitor center to get the flow better and also get, you know, a higher quality experience when people come here. And both for people that, you know, we have different products. You can come as a larger group, a study group, whatever, and want to give education. We would have some products like, you know, two or max six people to actually bring down to see the actual smokehouse. We have to be cautious about that. We can't put pressure on our food production and also our personnel down there. So, but there we do, you know, every so often do an experience like that. Mm. We have also just about to, hopefully June, open up a new it's not a new visitor center, it's a new area, we call it the heritage area, which is going to tell the story of Irish Atlantic salmon. So that's an investment in collaboration with Bordish Gamara. We're also collaborating with Bordbia here in our visitor center. So, you know, just we want to give an educational experience and tell more of the story of the in-depth story about the Irish Atlantic salmon, and that's wild salmon and it's Irish organic salmon. History, we use both, you know. So that's what we're working on right now, as I said, building a platform going forward. So it's quite busy. And then, of course, we run the Burns Low Food Festival, 12th of May. We have chefs coming in, Garrett Mullins from the Mocker Hotel. The seaweed pesto is coming. Una Dwyer, she's a seaweed forager, she's going to be here. Evan Taltu, they've been harvesting seaweed for generations. And the theme of the festival weekend is Taste the Atlantic Seaweed. And we also have fish shop is going to do a pop-up.
Oh.
We have Takashi Mizuyaki and, of course, Sally McKenna, because we have to have Sally McKenna, yes, and Takashi for seaweed.
Absolutely.
Theme, and John McKenna is going to launch it, so the McKenna guides are going to be here, and you know they've always been very supportive and fantastic, but they will launch the festival, and so we have some really great things coming up.
Excellent.
And that's a yearly event that we've been running for 14 years in consecutive years.
Yeah.
So it's one of the older festivals, and it's not a huge festival, but we want to make sure that it's the quality of the experience of the festival between the producers in the market stalls, in the little farmers market, and that the quality of the experiences, the demos, is high. We're going out to Aran Islands on the Friday to have a meal in the a seafood platter or a seafood meal in Tig Ned, who's owned by a fisherman who does his lobster and crab fishing. So, you know, so we're tying in with Aran Islands as well. You know, they're part of our community. So.
Absolutely.
We are dying to go to the islands sometime. It's like, I think it's the ultimate bucket list destination for us, isn't it, in Ireland?
It's an entire trip of its own, though. I think it cannot be squeezed into a day. It has to be a real experience.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, for the festival as well, you know, we have the likes of Julia's Lobster Truck. We have, so there'll be, you know, there'll be some really, really good food to go as well.
Oh,
you know, plus there's eateries around the area as well, and experiences, foraging walk and whatever. Yeah, so,
Oh, it sounds delicious.
Yeah.
So, taxonomic, we haven't spoken one word of Swedish throughout the whole thing. This is disgraceful.
Svenska.
Should have started off by going New Shorvi, but anyway. Tack så mycket.
Varsågod.
That's all I've got. You're better than me.
Perfect.
Hey, Noah.
Brilliant.
Ever the champion of Irish food and all things Irish, Birgitta is a force in the Irish food industry, and we were so, so happy to be able to share a bit more of her story with you all, especially because she is well known in the Irish food industry, but hopefully you've gotten to know her a little bit more through our Chewing the Fat with her.
Do keep an eye out for some of the Burren Smokehouse products. Believe us, you will be delighted when you get to try them. If you have enjoyed listening to this episode of Chew the Fat, or indeed any of the episodes of the past three seasons to date, we thank you. But we'd also like to mention about buymeacoffee.com, which enables you to help support us with the running costs of this 100% free and independently produced podcast, which is on your phones or your tablets every single Friday throughout the series. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/chewthefat for your chance to help donate toward us.
For more from us, you can check out our food features, our recipes, travel guides, and everything else that we do at gastroguides.com.